Morning. Today's daf in Gittin's Pehei. Thank Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned with Zecha Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bash Moel. Let's just go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us that if your man divorces his wife and gives her clearance to marry whomever she wants, but there's one person, however, that he has in his mind that he never wants to see his ex-wife to marry. And he says, Chutz mi ploni, except with the exception to put to so-and-so. Actually, the language of the Mishnah was Ela l'ploni. And we had the lengthy discussion in the Gemara, what does the word Ela mean? Does it mean Chutz? Does it mean Al-Tanai? But anyway, he has one person in mind that he does not want his wife to be with. So is that going to be a good get, yes or no? The answer is no. Machlokis in the Mishnah, Rabbi Lazar in the Chachamim, Rabbi Eliezer says, that is, she's muteris, that's enough of a get. That satisfies the condition of severance. But the Chachamim say no. Severance means, divorce means, that she has to be muteris the Chol Adam. It has to be a complete break between husband and wife. The Mishnah then went on to say, So the Mishnah says, in terms of a get that was given incorrectly, meaning that when the husband handed the get over to his wife, he says to her, everyone but so-and-so, that's not good. We hold like the Chachamim. So therefore, what he has to do, says the Mishnah, is he has to take it back. He then has to give it back to her and say correctly, now, then the Mishnah goes on. And the Mishnah says, what if the condition is written in the get? Meaning up until this point in the Mishnah where we're talking about a verbal condition. He verbally stipulated when he gave her the get that you can marry whomever you want except for so-and-so. But now the Mishnah is describing, what if it's written in the get itself? So here, says the Mishnah, there simply is no correction. You can erase it, and the Mishnah says, and that's not going to be good enough. It simply will not work. Okay, why should that be? So let's see, the Mishnah is going to be discussing.
Kasu
b'socha. We're just talking about the stipulation itself.
Stipulation can be written in the get.
Yeah, sure. In other words, you could write ostensibly any stipulation in the get, and that would be fine. Okay, and the get would be good. Now, I say that, but I also know the Gemara coming up, so I'm a little bit cautious in how I say it, but that would seem to be the simple shot. Kasu b'socha, we are in the Gemara on Pei Dalamud Beis. We're at the two dots, and the Gemara starts the discussion. I'm a Rav Safra, Kasu b'socha tanan. So Rav Safra says the correct way to understand the Mishnah is that when the stipulation is written in the get itself. Safra does not seem to be adding any new information to that which we already knew. And the Gemara says, Pshita, Kasu b'socha tanan. And the Gemara says, well, that seems to be pretty obvious when you read the Mishnah seemed to be pretty clear that the Mishnah objected to writing a stipulation in the get itself. So the Gemara says, I might have thought as follows. That's only true if it was written after the Torah. We've discussed since the beginning of the Masechta that basically what the get could be broken down to is what's called the Tofes and the Torah. Tofes is just simply the standardized form of the get that is written for any recipient of a get. It's standardized. It's the Nusach HaGet. And then the Torah is the important part of the get that identifies who this get is being given from, to whom. So that's the Torah HaGet. So basic information, Shem HaBaal, Shem HaIsha, Shem HaIr. Okay, personal information. That's the Torah HaGet. The Gemara says, I might have thought that this entire debate is only La'achar Torah, only when written after the Torah. Ava lifnei HaTorah, afilo ha'peh, nami pasul. However, if there was a stipulation, both written and verbal, and it was given before the Tarif, I might have thought that such a get would be a pasul get. So what Rav Safra is coming to teach us is that no. When it comes to verbal stipulations are fine. And it does not matter when the verbal stipulation is offered, whether it's before the Tarif or whether it's after the Tarif. However, when it comes to a written stipulation, that and only that is what the Mishnah is pasuling. Kamash Milan. V'rava amar lo shenu el alachar tof, ava lifnei atorif afilo apel nami pasul. Rava disagrees with this point. In fact, this is exactly now the point of contention between Rav and Rav Safra. Rav is of the opinion that when you write a get and you put no stipulation in the get, and it's all, and all you're doing is just verbally stipulating, you cannot do that before the Taref. In fact, if you do that before the Taref, the get will be pasul. And Rava made it very clear to anyone who's running a get, the husband cannot say anything until the Taref of the get is written and finished writing. Then, and only then, if the husband wants to put a verbal stipulation, he may do so. But to do so before the Taref is being written, so that that Rava says you're not allowed to do that. Okay. And perhaps, although the Gemara doesn't really give a svara, but the simple svara would be, is that if it's a verbal stipulation before the Taref is written, it really calls into the question the severance of this document. Meaning the whole purpose of this document is to create distance and severance between husband and wife. And the husband now wants to stipulate and says, you know, the get's going to be conditional on, and he'll put whatever condition he's going to put in. If he does so before the Taref, it could be that the svara behind Rava, and again, we're only talking about a verbal stipulation, but I'm suggesting that it could be, according to Rava, that a verbal stipulation before the Taref basically means it's not really a get. We're not really, with this document, creating a severance between me and you. In fact, I'm putting in a condition even before the get's on paper. That already is calling into question the true krisus haget. Masha'enkin, if you're doing it after the get was written, so then really it is just that. It's just a tanai. It's just a condition that needs to be fulfilled, but the get is be'ikaron, a good get. That could be the svar behind Rava. Continuing in the Gemara, we're now towards the bottom of Peidalmud Beis. Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara quotes a brisa. Kol tanai posam beget divrei Rebbe. A Rebbe says that you cannot have a tanai written in the get. And in fact, if you do, the get will be pasul. What is Rebbe saying? If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi is very clear what Rebbe is saying. Im kasva besocho, afilu niskaima tanai. What Rebbe is saying is, I don't want any condition written in the get. You want a verbally stipulated condition? Okay. You know, we're certainly not condoning it, but fine. A verbal stipulation is fine. But a written stipulation in the get itself, the way Rashi understands Rebbe, is that's no good.
Any condition.
And it sounds like from Rashi, any condition. Sounds that way. That's his understanding of Rebbe. If you take a look at the second to last Tosus on the Amud, Tosus Divra Maschol, Kol Tanayim Posel Meget, he quotes the Rashi. That's the way he understands Rashi. And then the Balei HaTosus go to task on Rashi in terms of Rashi's understanding. Tosus has a very difficult time imagining that there would be such a Shita in the Gemara. Even though it's Rebbe, and the Chachamim are going to argue, but it's very difficult, says Tosus, to imagine that there is a Shita in the Gemara that a condition cannot be written in the get itself. What difference would it be between verbally stipulating a condition versus writing a condition? And as you'll see over the context of the next couple lines of the Gemara, it's very difficult to support such a pshat, even though Rashi gave such a pshat. It's very difficult to support it. Let's go on in the Gemara. Kol tanai posel meget divrei Rebbe, v'chachamim omrim kol sheposel al peh posel b'ksav, v'chol sheino posel al peh eino posel b'ksav, chut sheposel al peh posel b'ksav, amenah sheino posel al peh eino posel b'ksav. And the chachamim's position is, look, a condition is a condition. And there's no difference whether it's verbal or it's written. If it's a condition that would work, like a condition of amanas, right? On condition that's fine. That's fine both in word and in writing. If you say chutz, that's not fine. That's an exclusion in the get. That's a limited get. We don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. Such a get would be an invalid get. So if you were to say chutz, whether you said it or whether you wrote it down in the get, that's not going to be good. The Chachamim's position is there's simply no difference between verbal and writing. If it's good in verbal, it's good in writing. If it's not good in verbal, it's not good in writing. Amar Rabbi Zeira. Machlokis lefnei ha-toref. The entire debate that exists over here is where it was done before the Taref of the get. The Rebbe Sofer Gazrinan Amanasa to Chutz, and the Gemara says, and what's Rebbe's concern? You write in the get a condition, and even if you write it correctly, the Chachamim were concerned that the next get that's going to be written, in other words, if we start getting into this habit and culture of everyone starting to write the conditions in the get itself, is that the next time it's going to happen, instead of writing the words Amanas, the person's going to write Chutz. And again, to the unlearned, what's the difference? Right? It's basic. It's an exclusion. Same thing as a condition. Now we know we've been now sitting in the ninth parak, and the truth of the matter is we discussed this at length in the seventh parak as well. The difference is the condition just simply means that there's a condition to fulfill, but once the condition's fulfilled, it's a full severance between husband and wife. The word chutz is an exclusion, and you can't do that. You can't put an exclusion in the get. You can't limit her ability of who she can marry. So there's a huge difference. But again, once people get into the habit of writing amanas, they may write chutz into the get as well. And the chachamim feel that there is no such gzeira, like we've discussed a number of times. In the world of gzeiros, the Tanaim actually argue whether there is or there isn't a gzeira. I know it's difficult. It could be that gzeiros were made community by community, right? The most classic and the easiest example, you know, you can always point to is the gzeira of not eating chicken and milk. Right? Gzeira derabanan. You eat chicken and milk, you're going to eat meat and milk. So that's gzeira derabanan. Not every community held by that gzeira of chicken and milk. The Gemara in Chulin tells us that in the community of Rav Yosi HaGalili, so they ate chicken and milk. In other words, the gzeira wasn't there. So it could be, I'm just trying to articulate how it's possible that we can have a debate as to whether or not there is or there isn't a gzeira. Okay, it could be that the gzeiras were instituted community on a community basis. But all that stated, the Chachamim feel, no, there's no such gzeira of if you end up writing amanas, you're going to end up writing chutz. Avalachra torev divra kol kasher. Now, if you're writing something in the get itself, and it's achra torev, which means that the get's done. And now, just a couple of addendums after you write the torev. So there, according to Rabbi Zeira, there's no debate between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Alachra torev, it would be fine. Umasitzin diktani kasvu vukimna bechutz av amanas l'pasol. Now, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, where the Mishnah said the word kasvu, and the Mishnah clearly didn't like it, and the Mishnah didn't like it even if you erase it, so the Mishnah is talking about where what was written down was chutz. Chutz is a deal breaker. It's a get breaker. It doesn't validate the get. But if you write almanas, it's not gonna passel the get. Ibai seim lefnei Torah v'rabana. Now, how are you going to understand the Mishnah? Two ways to understand the Mishnah. One way to understand the Mishnah is that it was written lifnei HaTorif, and the Mishnah is going like the Chachamim. V'ibay sem lach HaTorif v'divrei Akol. Or it could be that it was after the Torif, and it's going according to everyone. This is Rabbi Zeira's qualification of the debate between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Writing a stipulation in the get before the Torif, machlokas. After the Torif, divrei Akol is fine. Writing the word chutz, that's a deal breaker. All right.
Is there any chutz that cannot be formatted in a form of tonight?
Once you say chutz, that's an exclusion. That's
it. Anything that he wants to go as a chutz, format as a tonight.
The very nature of al tonight means it's a condition that once fulfilled, the get's going to be valid in total. That's the assumption. Rava Amar Machlokas Achra Tarif. The Rabbi Sever Gazrin Atul Lifnei Tarif. Rabbanan Sever Lo Gazrin Atul Lifnei Tarif. And Rava says no. Rava takes a stricter viewpoint of the debate between Rabbi and the Chachamim. If you write a condition in the get and you write it after the Tarif, that's where we're going to have a debate between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Ava Lifnei Tarif. I'm sorry. And before moving on, and Rabbi's position is Gzera and Gzera. Gzera number one. If we start writing conditions after the Torah, we're going to start writing conditions before the Torah as well. Gzera number two. If you wrote a condition before the Torah, so the word amanas over the course of time is going to turn into chutz, which is a get breaker. So really, according to Rebbe, it's a double gzera. One gzera that the condition will move from after the Torah to before the Torah, and then gzera number two, it's going to shift from amanas to chutz. Okay, ain. Osing gzera l'gzera, you don't make one gzera on top of another gzera, but like the Gemara says in a number of places, although the Gemara doesn't say it over here, kula chad gzera hi. It's really all part of the same gzera. But if you have a condition in the get being written before the Tarif, that, according to everyone, is pasal. Now, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, where the stipulation was written in the get, and it was not any stipulation, but it was the word chutz. But the word amanas would be fine. The Amish Mishnah would be Achar Taref V'Rabbanu. So our Mishnah, which is comfortable and fine with writing a condition in a get, as long as it's put in the words Amanas, is according to Rava only after the Taref, and the Shita of the Mishnah is only going according to the Chachamim. So he'll have a much more limited application of the Mishnah. Okay, the following brisa was taught in front of Rabbi Zera, and the brisa reads like this: If you write a get with a condition, according to everybody, it would be pasul. Okay, that's the brisa. So, divrei hakol pasul v'hamiflag pligi. So the Gemara says, how can you even understand that brisa? The brisa seems to make no sense. We just learned that's a machlokas about writing a condition within a get. And the brisa clearly is talking about a tanai. The brisa is clearly not talking about chutz. And the brisa says, if you do so in the get, no good. No good. It's a machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim. And the brisa is saying the words divrei hakol. Like, what is the brisa talking about? So, So obviously the brisa is going to need some editing. So here we go now. We're going to have to edit the brisa a little bit. And although when I say a little bit, I really mean change a word significantly. And the word pasul now is going to have to be changed to the word kosher. Now, writing a stipulation in the get, according to everybody, would be fine. So when would that be? You say al tanai, and you write it after the tarif. Now, mind you, by the way, this editing of the brisa is only going to work according to Rabbi Zera. The editing of the brisa is not going to work according to Rava, because Rava's position is that according to Rabbi, you cannot write a condition to get, period. So it can only, this only works according to Rabbi Zera's understanding. V'lema harez apostle v'Rabbi tana. So the Gemara says, look, you're editing the brisa. So why not take out your pen and leave the word pasul in the brisa, and just simply say that not divrei hakol, but it's Rebbe. So the Gemara says divrei hakol asne. So the Gemara, all right, tana divrei hakol asne. So the Gemara says like this: look, we're trying to find a clerical error in the brisa. Clearly, somebody made a mistake as passing along the brisa. In this game of telephone where we're passing the brisa from one to another, we have to look for basically what probably was the error that crept into the brisa. So if the brisa had the word divrei hakol, most probably that divrei hakol was there, and that probably wasn't subject to a mistake. Kasher b'pasul. Now, obviously, they mean two opposite things. But you know every brisa is going to conclude with either, I mean, it obviously depends what we're talking about, but mutter or aser, right, tami or tahor. Now, obviously, that's a critical punchline. But when all said and done, so many brisas end with either the words kasher or pasul, so it's easy to confuse those. So the Gemara says, michlaflei. So I can envision, says the Gemara, that those got confused. So harezeh b'divrei hakol lo michlaflei. But with the words harezeh, with the words divrei hakol, very hard to imagine that some Tana is going to have confused those terms, and so therefore unlikely that that was the mistake that crept into the brisa. So if we're going to edit the brisa, we're going to have to attack, quote unquote, the weak point of the brisa in where the brisa probably made the mistake. Okay, we start with the next Mishnah. Harei amateres l'chol adam ela la'aba la'avicha la'achi u'la'achicha la'eved u'la'ove kochavim u'lecho mi she'ein lo alav kiddushin kasher. You write an exclusion in the get, but it's not really an exclusion. The examples over here is you can marry whomever you want after our divorce, but you can't marry my father. You can't marry your father. Okay. Newsflash, she couldn't marry them anyway. So it's not really an exclusion. In fact, the Mishnah says exactly that point. It's not really exclusion. The examples that are given in the Mishnah of people that he excludes that are not really exclusions are either my father, your father, la'achi u'la'achicha, my brother, your brother, la'eved u'la'ove kochavim, to a slave or to a non-Jew. All these people already excluded. They're off her list of new candidates of her next husband. They're off anyway, so it's not an exclusion. And therefore, the Mishnah says, such a get would be kosher. Even though the husband is obviously trying to show some sort of control and power in the get, But the examples that he's giving, he's not exercising any control. He's not exercising any power. The get would be a valid get.
If he dies, it is an exclusion.
Nope. Once an erva, always an erva. Arayus never changed. There is one.
If he dies, she gave him a yavam to his brother.
That's a limited scenario. That's only if there is a surviving brother, and that's only if there's no children. Okay. There's one exception to the rule of once an erva, always an erva, and that's a sister, which the Gemara is going to investigate.
How about if it's a guy?
The Gemara is going to ask that question. Okay. So those are all exclusions which are not exclusions. Mm-hmm. Now here the Mishnah gets interesting. Hari muter sechol adam ela amana lekohen gadol, grusha vechalutz lekohen hedjot, mamzer senesina liyisrael. Now he does make an exclusion in the get, someone who the Torah says she cannot marry, but the kedushin would be chal if she does marry. So this is an interesting exclusion. So the chay ve'lavin, men who to her the Torah forbids, but acknowledges if the marriage takes place. I know that sounds like an oddity, but we're approaching the end of Seder Nashim. We've seen this time and again that for chay ve'lavin kedushin is tofes. So she shouldn't marry them, but the marriage would work. So are these people now that he identifies, are they exclusions to her? So the Mishnah will say, yes, they are. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, let me just read the Mishnah again. Aman lekohen gadol, grusha vechalutz lekohen hedjot, mamzer senesina liyisrael, ba'asisol ha-mamzer lenesin, v'chol mi sheyesh lo alav kedushin, as long as there could be a chalos kedushin, afila ba'avera, now you will have to go over an avera, violate an avera in order to marry these people, but there is a chalos kedushin, therefore it's an exclusion, therefore pasul. The get is not going to be a valid get. Okay. Why is that in the Mishnah? Right. So, all right, okay. Yeah, okay, I hear. Okay, I don't know. Klala de Reisha Lasuye Shar Chavi Krisos, Klala de Sefa Lasuye Shar Chavi Lavin. Now, the Gemara points out, the Gemara notes that in the Mishnah, after listing off a number of examples, the Mishnah then says a general rule. Right? The Mishnah says, the Ulechom Yishein Lo Alav Kiddushin. In the first half of the Mishnah. The second half of the Mishnah says, V'chom Yishein Lo Alav Kiddushin. So the Gemara just a simple comment that the Gemara says, and that is, the Mishnah is simply giving examples, but of course the general rule is, in the first half of the Mishnah, any Isuri Kares is not an exclusion. In the second half of the Mishnah, any Chayv Elavin is an exclusion. Okay. And now from here until the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud, the Gemara is going to probe and the Gemara is going to wonder out loud, what about the following examples? Are they going to be considered exclusions from the get? Number one, the Gemara says, Chutz Mikidushe Katan. Okay. He says to her, you can marry whomever you want, but that young man over there, he's a minor, you can't marry him. Okay, now I say young man, he's not a young man. He's a katan, he's a minor. The husband stipulates in the get, you can't marry him. So, mi aminan, hashta mi ala bar havaya, who? So, do we look at the here and now and simply say, it's not an exclusion because in his current state, he's not a bar havaya? Odilma asil achla havaya. So, or on the other hand, what you can argue is, okay, now, not eligible. But give him 5 years, and he'll be an eligible bachelor. And so maybe excluding him, even though in his current state unavailable, but if you wait a little bit of time, will be available, so maybe that is considered an exclusion. So the Gemara says, well, we learned it's based on the Mishnah. We know that if a ketana is married by her father, and then the father dies, so she still has an ability to receive a divorce. How can she receive a divorce? Very simple. You write her a divorce and you hand it over to her. Ketana misgareshes b'kedusha avia. Amai v'abiin and v'yatzav ha'isa. So the Gemara says, how can that be? She's not in a current position where she can get married. Her father was able to marry her off, but her father's no longer alive. And on top of that, the father already did it. And so now, how can she get a divorce? She can't get married. It must be based on the fact that although she can't currently get married, but she will become eligible when she gets older. And that is a pretty easy inevitability to look at. Hachanami asya lechla havaya. So the Gemara says here also, it's the idea that the boy's going to become a man, that's pretty inevitable. Barring anything unforeseen. But that's pretty inevitable. So the Gemara's basic conclusion is that would be considered an exclusion. How about the following? Chutz min hanolad demahu. Let's say the baby's not born yet. Okay? And look, you can marry anyone who currently is on this earth, but here's who you cannot marry. You can't marry somebody who's going to be born and obviously you're gonna exceed him in age by however old she is right now, at least her age. But the Gemara says that is this considered an exclusion? And again, the Gemara's basic question is, do we look at the here and now, or do we look at the potential? Now, this is here literally a davar shelo bala olam, meaning we're now, as opposed to the previous question where we were excluding minor men, so boys, as you would say. So there, at least they're there. Here, we're talking about somebody who's not here on this earth yet. Literally, a davar shelo bala olam. So amalei tenisua la'eved lo v'kochavim. So the Gemara says, well, let's take a look back at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, who is excluded an eved and an angel. So eved lo v'kochavim nami avida demiskare. So the Gemara says, isn't there an eventuality that the eved could be freed and become a full-fledged Jew? Isn't it a possibility that the non-Jew can convert and become a full-fledged Jew? So hanach lav li'iguri kaime hane li'isyul de'kaime. The Gemara says, yeah, but let's make the following distinction. In the case of a convert, a non-Jew is not meant to convert. Meaning, obviously can, but it's not a destiny for every non-Jew. In fact, it's not a destiny for most non-Jews. So the idea that he'll go from being non-Jew to Jew is, so to say, not as natural a process. Masha Enkin, when it comes to the birth of children, that's the way of the world. Children are born into this world. So although currently not here, not now, but certainly will be born. So the Gemara says that maybe we can draw the following that distinction. Chutz mi balachosa mahu. The husband of the sister. Okay, I said a moment ago when we learned the Mishnah, once an erva, always an erva. Right? A man's married to a woman, those woman's relatives to him are arayos and will continue to be for the rest of his life, even after death or divorce from his wife. They're still arayos. The notable exception to that is sister. A wife's sister would be permitted to him after the death of the wife. Okay, don't confuse this with Yibum. This is not a Yibum halacha. This is just simply a heter of Achos Isha. If the wife dies, not divorce. If the wife dies, the sister becomes permitted. So the Gemara says, Chutz mi bal achosa. So, let's say, what I don't want you to do is, he says to his wife when he divorces her, I don't want you to marry my brother-in-law. Right? Okay, I'm fine. I understand your point. But yes. In other words, your sister's husband. You cannot marry him. Now, currently, she's usher to him. But that may not be forever, because there's a possibility that her sister's going to die, making her brother-in-law available to her. So here, if he identifies her brother-in-law, is an exclusion. So the Gemara says, good, that's exactly the question. Are we looking at the current position where she is forbidden to him? Or at least there's a potential, not inevitability, but possibility that she'll be permitted to him. So the Gemara says, okay, well, look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah gives examples of people that are currently unavailable, but could in the future become available. A non-Jew can convert. And ever can be freed. The Gemara says, Geiros lo shchicha, misa shchicha. Look, everyone dies, not everybody converts. So, the chance of death, high. Although, admittedly, over here, in terms of the statistics, it's a gross oversimplification. Because you need not just death, but you need her to die before the sister. In other words, it's not as easy just simply saying death is inevitable, but relatively speaking, the death of the sister is certainly more inevitable than somebody converting.
So you could have brought that out from before, Lo'ochi, when he says, not to marry my brother. Now, if he doesn't have any children,
okay,
there's a possibility that...
It's fair, but the
I think
the Gemara is assuming that it's just an erva and it's not, and there's no yibam opportunity. But it is a fair question, though. In other words, if there's a yibam opportunity, okay, chutz mi miznosayach. I'm just thinking this through a little bit more. In other words, we're talking about divorce right now. There's not going to be yibam. Okay, chutz miznosayach mahu. So the Gemara says, let's say he puts the following exclusion in, and the exclusion is that, listen, you can marry whomever you want, but the znus with these people, that's going to be prohibited. Okay, I know it's to say the least, it is a weird exclusion that he's putting into the get. Again, I'm not giving psychology over here. You know, I don't want to pretend like I know psychology. But, like, in other words, it's just his ability. He has a right. He wants to exercise some control, even though they are now exes. So, chutz miznusayach, mahu. V'nisun halo shayer, odilma, shayer bibiya. So the Gemara says, is this considered an exclusion? Because on one hand, her ability to marry is uninhibited. On the other hand, the znus is going to be limited. So amalei tenisu alav alavicha. So the Gemara says, well, I think I know the answer to that, because look at the cases in the Mishnah. Who did he exclude her from? Her father. His father. Now, there is no such thing as marriage to either her father or the ex-husband's father. It's an erva. There's no marriage. So, ela lav biznus. So, it must be that when he's telling her, you can't be with either your father or my father, obviously he's not talking in the context of marriage. He's only limiting it to that of znus. And, ul abal avichu do shayer, hala achr shayer. So, now there, to the fathers, so znus is not considered exclusion because there's no potential for marriage. But for somebody else where there is a potential of marriage, so maybe znus would be considered exclusion. So, the Gemara says, Dilma binisuin da'avar sorry. So hala achreshayer Dilma binisuin. The da'avar v'instiv. So the Gemara says, well, it's possible that that even though he said the father could be, that the pshat in the Mishnah is that you're not allowed to marry the father, and that then there's no chalos of the marriage, but there was some sort of attempt to marry the father. Meaning, again, there's no chalos of the marriage, but she attempted in doing so. Chutz mishalo kedarka, mahu. Bekedarka halo shayer odilma mishkevei ishaksiv. So the Gemara is now going to trail off this discussion with a couple of indelicate questions. Number one, says the Gemara, what if he tries to limit her ability to have relations with her next husband? Let's say he says to her that you can have with any man you want, be a kedarka, but not be a shlo kedarka. Is that an exclusion? Chutz me'afars nedareh amahu. So the Gemara says, what if he says that whoever you marry in the future cannot be made for your neder? Is that an exclusion? You can marry whomever you want. He just can't be made for neder. Binisuin halo shayer odilma isha yikemenav isha yifernuksiv. So is that, the Gemara is basically asking, is the ability to be made for neder, is that such a defining point of marriage? Where if her next husband can't be made for neder, that really shows a chisaron in the marriage itself. Mahu, I'm sorry, chutz mitruma seich mahu. So the Gemara says, let's say, from the truma, the binisuin halo shayer odilma kinyan kasbok sif. On one hand, okay, she's married, even though she's not in truma. On the other hand, maybe her restriction from not eating truma really cuts into the very definition of the marriage, and it would show that he, the former husband, has now has restricted her an aspect of marriage itself. chutz mi Yerushasech mahu. What if he tells her that, listen, you can marry whomever you want, but you're not gonna, but he's not gonna inherit you when you die. So benisuin halo shayro duma l'sheiro v'yirisho saksiv. So the Gemara says once again, this cuts into. It could be that it's not an exclusion. On the other hand, if the husband can't inherit her and her possessions when she dies, maybe that really cuts into a limitation of the marriage itself. Chutz mikdusha sech b'shtar mahu. Let's say the husband, again, just a way of exercising control, says, look, you marry whomever you want, but you cannot marry anybody through shtar. Meaning I'm only limiting your ability to marry somebody through kesef or through bia, but not through shtar. So mi amrina and esher de mekashlo be kesef of bia, oduma v'yatzav ha'isa itkeshavai la'adadi. So the Gemara says again, on one hand, she can marry whomever she wants. On the other hand, her inability to marry Bishtar may cut into the very definition of the marriage. The get is severed through contract. The marriage needs to be at least potentially entered into contract. And if she can't do it, maybe that cuts into the very definition of marriage. Teku, the Gemara leaves these and all the previous questions that we just rattled off in a state of unresolved questions. You probably were wondering at this juncture of the Masechta, we're almost a week away from finishing the Masechta. You're probably wondering, what is the text of the get? We haven't covered that yet, all right? Which is fair. We are not going to see, neither in the Mishnah nor in the Gemara itself, a full rendition of the get itself. Now, that shouldn't be so strange, because the truth of the matter is, it's not a terrible analogy, but tefillah, like Shemoneh Esrei, for example. Shemoneh Esrei, which was already instituted by Anshei Knesset HaGedolah at the beginning of Bayit Sheni, so you're never going to see Shemoneh Esrei, the Nusach of Shemoneh Esrei, in the Gemara itself. The Gemara in Megillah goes through a whole sequence of this bracha follows this bracha, and this bracha follows this bracha, and it gives us the framework, the outline of Shemoneh Esrei, but it doesn't give us the Nusach of Shemoneh Esrei. And we know in this very room we have Ashkenazim, we have Sephardim. We know that there are variant distinctions in the nusach of Shemoneh Esrei, right? But in terms of the outline, in terms of the basic backbone of what Shemoneh Esrei looks like, so that's given to us in the Gemara. The nusach itself is not given to us in the Gemara. Same thing is true regarding a get. A get's a document which was ubiquitous. Everybody knew the standard version of the get. The Gemara itself is not. The Gemara itself is going to give us an outline of here's what the get requires, and this is what needs to be in the get, but doesn't actually give us the nusach get. We're not going to see it in the Mishnah. We're not going to see it in the Gemara. But there's an assumption that of the Gemara that, of course, we all know the nusach get, right? Baruch Hashem, if you've had a successful marriage and never been involved in a divorce, you probably have seen what a get looks like. But the Gemara's assumption is that if you're learning Gemara, you probably know what the nusach get actually is. Let us start with the Mishnah. We're here from this Mishnah and the upcoming Sugya. We are going to be basically dealing with some of the aspects of the nusach get. Okay, the essence of the get, the ikar haget, is the line of Hare Matar Sechol Adam, which, by the way, fits in perfectly with what we learned in the previous Mishnah and in the first Mishnah of the ninth parak of Gittin, which is no exclusions, no exceptions. The get has to allow her to marry whomever she wants. We're now on the top of Pei Hei Amud Beis. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, V'dan di havelecha minai sefer terichon, V'iger shavukin, V'get peturin. And Rabbi Yehuda adds on, and this document, now you'll notice, by the way, the shift from Hebrew to Aramaic. It's an interesting shift. Almost every time, I cannot say this comprehensively because that assumes that I remember the Mishnayos, but almost every time the Mishnah makes a reference to a document, the document is written in Aramaic. It seems pretty clear, this is not me, the historian, speaking, because I'm not a historian, but it seems pretty clear that the language that was spoken in Eretz Yisrael, Bizman Ksivas HaMishnayos, circa the second century, BCE is, I'm sorry, CE of the Common Era, seems like the language that was spoken was Aramaic. Because any time the Mishnah teaches us what the Nusach of a document is, the Mishnah almost always writes in Aramaic. They spoke Aramaic at the time. I know that's interesting because we're in Eretz Yisrael. We're not in Bavel. In Bavel, you understand everyone speaks Aramaic. In Eretz Yisrael, seems pretty clear they were speaking Aramaic. And it's what I'm saying seems to be pretty factual, and I don't need to give any bigger proof than the fact that the Talmud Yerushalmi was written in Aramaic. Now, granted, that was written a little bit after the Mishnayos, but once again, seems pretty clear that Aramaic was the spoken language of Eretz Yisrael as well after Churban Bayis Sheni.
It was interesting that that was for the purpose of people understanding the documents.
No, right, correct. In other words, right. The whole point of the documents is so that it be understood.
Right. Right.
Well, I thought you were going to argue that here it should be written in English. I mean,
no.
Okay, fine. Anyway, but doesn't seem like it's going to change. But anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Vidandi Havela Chaminai Sefer Terichon VeGer Shavukin VeGet Peturin. So, and also part of the standardized form of the get is that you say, and this will be for you from me, a document which creates severance, which means that you're going to exit, and it'll mean that you'll be excused. Three seems to be right. Three synonymous words, but basically all centered around the idea. You're free to walk around the cabin. So lemehach linsave lechol gevar diyasatzvin, and you cannot marry whomever you want. Gufol shaget shichur hare at bat chorin hare at laatzmech. And now the Mishnah contrasts: if you're writing a get shechur, a letter of emancipation, a document of emancipation to free the shivcha kananis. Now the fundamental difference: the Gemara is, of course, not making an equivalency. The fundamental difference is that as opposed to a wife, you don't own the wife. There's no kinyan aguf. In terms of a shivcha kananis, there is a kinyan aguf. So the Mishnah says, "Hare at baschorin, hare at laatzmech." So the language employed in the get shichur of a shivcha kananis is going to focus more on her and her emancipation. You are free, or you own yourself. Those are the languages that are going to be employed by the shivcha kananis. And the Gemara now notes that pshita, it seems to be obvious, amar la leishto hare abas chorin lo amar v'lo klum. Amar la leshivchasi hare metos chol adam lo amar v'lo klum. And the Gemara notes right away that the point of the Mishnah is that this is not mix and matchable. You can't use a language that is identified for the divorce of the woman, of the wife, and use that for the shivcha kananis, and vice versa. You can't use the language of the shivcha kananis and use it for the wife, and again, the reason being for the reason that we just laid out in the Mishnah. The fundamental difference is that by a wife, there's no kinyan aguf. Right? You're married. You don't own. There's no ownership. When it comes to the shivcha kananis, there is ownership. So if a man says to his woman, Hare at la'atzmech, now this could be a little bit ambiguous. Is this an acceptable language for a wife? Is Hare at la'atzmech simply a way of saying you're free? I mean, you can marry whomever you want, meaning this is a divorce, or no? It could be Hare at la'atzmech means, you know what? Used to be that everything you earned was going to go to me. You know what? Keep your earnings. Marriage will be intact. You'll keep your earnings.
Is it verbal, this thing, or do you write?
It sounds like it's written. In the context of our Mishnah and our discussion, it sounds like he wrote it. Amalei Ravina LeRavashi Tashma did not gufa shegad shechra hariat ba'charin hari alatzmech. So ma avda dekanele gufe ki amalei hari alatzmech kani gufe. So the Gemara now makes an argument. When it comes to a shivcha where you own the shivcha, so there, when you say hari alatzmech, it frees her. Isha de lo kani gufe lo kol shekein, a wife where you don't own her, and you say hare ala tzmech lo kol shekein al akas kama v'kama, how much more so? The words hare ala tzmech means to free her. It's an interesting kavachomer. The Gemara doesn't challenge it. The Gemara seems to be very comfortable with the kavachomer, just simply pointing out it's apples and oranges, meaning the word hare ala tzmech, you could argue. I don't mean to be argumentative. If you've been around long enough, you'll know it's not my nature to be argumentative, but you could argue the point and simply say Harei Latzmech for Shivcha is applicable because you own her. Maybe the exact point is, that's exactly the point. It doesn't work for a wife because you don't own her. So why the Gemara feels that it's a good kavachom over here, so I need to understand a little bit better. Amalei Ravina, Ravashi, Amalei La'avdo, Ainli Esek Bach, Mahu. Let's say you have an Evan, and the language that you write is Ainli Esek Bach. No, I got no business with you. They're telling you, the Gemara says we're going to go back, halfway back in the Masechta, to what we learned earlier in the fourth parak, if I'm correct. You sell your Eved to an Ove Kochavim. You should not do that. The Chachamim were so unhappy with somebody selling his Eved to an Eved Kanani. In other words, when you owned him, he was Chayv and Mitzvos. Now you're selling him to an Eved Kanani, to a Goy, to an Ove Kochavim. He's not going to be Chayv and Mitzvos. So Yatzal Echeros. So he goes free. That's a Knas that you have to free him. And the Shah Shikhar has to be written by the original owner. I'm a Shem and Gamlil, but Medvam or Mishlo Kasavalav Ono. Avakasavalav Ono, Zeo Shikhuro. That's only if there was no bill of sale. But if there was a bill of sale, so then you don't have to write a get Shikhar. My Ono, what exactly does that word mean? I'm a Shisha, is the Kasavla, Lichishitivrach mi menu, Ainli Esek Bach. When you run away from him, I no longer have Esek Bach. The only reason why we brought this down is just simply to show that the expression Ein Le'Esek Bach is in fact a legitimate way of saying that he releases the Eved Kanani. Okay, that's good. Indicative of the fact that we should end. We'll stop here. We finished up the sugya of writing a stipulation in the contract itself. The way Rashi understands the Gemara, again, Tosfos doesn't agree, but according to Rashi, whether or not you're allowed to write a condition in a shtar is a machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Rebbe says you cannot write a condition in a shtar; you can only verbally stipulate, but you cannot write into the get. The Chachamim disagree with that. In terms of the limitation of that debate, is that true before the Torah? Is that true after the Torah? That's a machlokus amoraim between Rebbe Zer and Rava. Okay, so that, to put it lightly, that discussion is a complicated discussion. Machlokas Tanaim, Machlokas Amoraim, and a Machlokas Rishonim in terms of even how to understand it. Okay. Then we went on to discuss writing exclusions in the get that are not real exclusions. Excluding her from Isurei Arayos, that's not an exclusion. Excluding her from Isurei Lavin, that is an exclusion. He shouldn't marry her. She shouldn't marry them, I'm sorry. But the Kedushin would be Chal. And then the Gemara rattles off a series of questions of really nuanced issues of whether or not they are or not exclusions on the part of the husband. And the Gemara ends off with a lot of them with the word teku. What is the nusach haget? So like I said, the Mishnah and the Gemara are never going to give away the entire nusach haget, but in terms of what are the core essential nusach haget, hareat mutaras chol adam, and then Rabbi Yehuda adds on three synonymous Aramaic expressions in terms of she is released and she can marry whomever she wants, and then a contrast between the get isha versus a get shechur for a shivcha kananis.